welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I am John Tanza on this pre-recorded program from my apartment in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, June 3rd, 2020. Two people died in a land dispute outside Juba Town. And the Catholic Church is urging the government of South Sudan to fight COVID-19.
We are facing a challenging time, and our communities are uncertain of what is going to happen next. We are afraid.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan's military spokesperson says two people were shot dead and several others wounded during a land dispute in Juba's Sherikat neighborhood. Major General Rul Roy Kwong says the shootout was sparked by a dispute involving a senior military officer and some civilians. He says the officer has been arrested. Some Sherikat residents marched to the streets, chanting anti-Salva Kiir slogans. Manyang David Mayar reports for VOA from Juba.
Shortly after the shooting took place in Sherikat neighborhood, some residents took to the street to demonstrate. The protesters blocked the Numili Highway, burned tires on the road, and chanted anti-Kiir administration slogans. Police and members of the South Sudan Army opened fire on the demonstrators to try to disperse the crowd. Demonstrator Juk Thiong Juk says the dispute began over a person connected to President Salva Kiir who tried to grab land from local residents.
There is a person, so-called Lual Marine. Lual Marine is a cousin to the president. Lual Marine is trying to grab the land from both community citizens. And when the citizen tried to react and to reopen their businesses, Lual Marine came with the soldiers and they immediately start shooting the civilian. And in that moment, they shot dead two men and one woman. Another five are injured. And the government is silent. We are the people of this government, and the government is killing us.
A statement issued by President Spokesman Atenywek Ateny says, quote, "The killing of five people, four men and one woman, is a very serious criminal act, and the perpetrators must be punished," end quote. The statement identifies the suspect as Luala Kuwol Kiir, a distant cousin of President Kiir. It said the perpetrator was apprehended by authorities and has been transported to a nearby hospital where he is listed in critical condition. It is unclear whether he was injured during the incident or after his arrest. South Sudan Army spokesman Major General Lu Rai Kong confirms the fighting started in what appears to be a land dispute between a senior army officer identified as Lual Marine and civilians at Sherikat neighborhood.
The information I received is indicating that there was a misunderstanding between one of our officers at Sherikat. And I briefly got out of hand and got a result from shooting distance between him and his bodyguard on one hand and civilians on the other. The information I'm having at my desk is saying two were shot dead and a few were wounded.
South Sudan in Focus saw two bodies, including an old man in Sherikat this morning. The other body was that of a young woman who makes and sells tea at Sherikat Bus Park. Kong identified the army officer involved in the shooting as Lieutenant Colonel Lual Marine. Kong says security officers arrested Marine and are looking for his bodyguards who are still at large. Major General Daniel Justin, a spokesman for the South Sudan National Police Service, confirms the shootings took place and says police are working to restore calm in the area.
We are still at the crime scene here. We have not even known the investigation yet, but maybe after some time. Also, there are some people wounded, but still, they have right to the hospital. We have not finished with them to know exactly their number and so on.
Police and members of the South Sudan Army can be seen using live bullets to disperse demonstrators. Grang Abraham is a demonstrator who saw another demonstrator shot by the police.
We were coming together and he got shot by a policeman. He's wounded here on the leg. He was shot on the thighs here. from inside.
That demonstrator was left bleeding in the street and later died, which angered the crowd even more, according to Abraham. Speaking in a mixture of Arabic and English, demonstrator Amir Majur says she is saddened by the killing of an innocent woman who was trying to earn a little income to take care of her children.
Shabab kulu, unasawin kulu, nas kulu fi sharia. Nas kulu fi sharia na zalan, ni na mara de na zalan. Now today, is killing our brothers, is killing our sisters. He's very innocent ladies. Now they are used to be making their tea and they're making their better thing to be elevate their kid. Now the cause of the problem, now the one is killed them, is governor of South Sudan.
Demonstrator Duke Thiong says today's shootings make the government more dangerous than the coronavirus.
The government is now killing our innocent people. What is the difference between coronavirus and President Kiir and his close relative? When his own son is killing the innocent civilian.
Atenj's statement said the President of the Republic urges restraint from the families and community of the victims. President Kiir warned against politicizing what the statement called a clear criminal act, end quote. The Numili Highway, a critical route in and out of Juba, remains closed. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
Four South Sudanese soldiers were killed by Ugandan forces at a disputed area on the South Sudan-Uganda border over the weekend. Brigadier Richard Karimire, Uganda People's Defense Forces spokesperson, says the South Sudanese soldiers were killed after they sneaked into Ugandan territory. The two countries have set up a joint body to investigate the incident. Mungume Davis Rokarinch reports from Kampala.
South Sudan Army spokesman Major General Lul Ruai Kong says the four soldiers were conducting a patrol along the South Sudan-Uganda border to enforce COVID-19 rules restricting entry into South Sudan.
They were monitoring illegal crossing of villagers who are trying to get into South Sudan through illegal ways. They were five servicemen, four from SSPDF and one from South Sudan National Police Service. They went to a contested area called Buya, that had a water hand pump. They went and wanted to bring some water after having conducted patrols on foot. Then from nowhere, UPF soldiers appeared, opened fire on them, killed four on the spot, and wounded the fifth one.
Uganda People's Defense Forces spokesman Brigadier Richard Karimire confirms Ugandan soldiers killed the South Sudanese soldiers, saying they tried to sneak into Uganda's border district of Yumbe.
They ended up in the Ugandan territory. They crossed over and when challenged, stopped. When they were armed, they did not. So that's what resulted into a shootout. They strayed in our territory. There were seven soldiers, with six of them putting on civilian clothes and one in uniform. But all were armed and ended up crossing into Uganda 1.5 kilometers.
Kong says the Ugandan soldiers reacted with excessive force.
The reason they gave is that they had suspected them of crossing into Uganda with intention of looting. That was the reason they gave to allies and officer who got in touch with the UPDF forces. But to us, we felt they had overreacted. They were a small force comprising of only five servicemen. They did not provoke them.
Karimire says it was an unfortunate incident, adding that Uganda maintains excellent relations with South Sudan.
That matter is being investigated, and the bodies have since been handed over to the South Sudan authorities. The situation is very calm. This was an isolated incident that cannot cause tension between the two brother countries.
A joint commission headed by the Chief of Defense Forces from both countries has been formed to investigate the killings and present recommendations to prevent such incidents from occurring in the future. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
The Archbishop of the Catholic Archdiocese, Stephen Amiu Mula, is calling on the government of South Sudan to combat the COVID-19 pandemic by imposing a total lockdown as the number of cases continue to increase. Muller says the Catholic Church is keeping places of worship closed to control the spread of the disease. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
Catholic Archbishop Stephen Ameyo Muller told reporters in Juba Tuesday that the rising number of COVID-19 cases in South Sudan worries him.
As the pandemic swept across the globe, we know it has the potential to destroy lives and to create devastating social, economic, and political predicaments, as witnessed in recent months. We are facing a challenging time, and our communities are uncertain of what is going to happen next. We are afraid.
Archbishop Ameyo says if the government does not strengthen measures aimed at preventing the spread of COVID-19, the situation in South Sudan could worsen.
With the rising death toll and numbers of confirmed cases nearing almost 1,000 persons, I appeal to the government, citizens, and God's people across our country to urgent action. The time of action against coronavirus in South Sudan is now, not tomorrow.
Ameyo is calling on the government to consider imposing a total lockdown to control the spread of the disease. He is also urging church-based relief organizations to focus more on providing food for vulnerable populations.
Restrictions, measures have significant and severe economic cost and consequences on our people, particularly those who live on daily wages, and the poor and the vulnerable, who are the most at risk. It is on this note that I also call upon our Catholic agencies, donors, international and local partners to support our people with basic livelihood necessities so that they are safe from both corona and hunger-related death.
Archbishop Ameyo says Catholic schools remain closed and other pastoral activities have been brought to a standstill.
The pastoral impact of COVID-19 restrictions on our churches and chapels has been very great. Nevertheless, it is a moral duty for the church to save lives.
Ameyo encourages all faithful, including clergy, to be tested for COVID-19 to better protect themselves and others from contracting the virus. Ameyo says the Catholic Church will form a parish rapid response group to disseminate awareness on COVID-19, provide protective gears for clergy and faithful, and disinfect churches, schools, and other buildings. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Sudanese are calling for justice. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
if you could swap lives for a day, who would you swap with and why?
I'll swap with our finance minister because I think he's doing a yeoman job and I want to have a feel of what he goes through in a day.
I'll change with my dad because I love him so much. He has been there for us. I mean, like, he has taken us in good schools. He has taken care of us because for us, our mom is not working. We depend on our dad.
If I was to swap with someone, I feel I admire myself more than anyone in this life, and I feel I'm capable of doing what those people are doing, so I would not swap for any person.
I would like to change position with the president because I feel it would be nice to give instruction to everyone.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. There has been growing global outrage over the death of George Floyd, racial injustice, and heavy-handed police. In Paris Tuesday, riot police faced off with protesters, while officials across Africa have expressed concern. The head of the African Union described Floyd's death as an act of murder, while South Africa's ruling party is calling for calm in the U.S. Statements from the African continent could indicate a shift in global relations and hopefully, analysts say, make a bigger point. Whether you live in Minneapolis or Monrovia, George Floyd's death affects us all. For VOA, Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Minneapolis, Washington, Houston, New York, Detroit, Philadelphia, Atlanta. In recent days, rage in these and other cities over police brutality against Black Americans has spread across the United States. But the outrage has also spread to Africa. In Addis Ababa, African Union Commission Chairman Moussa Faki Mahamat took the U.S. government to task over the death of Floyd. Going a step further, the former Chadian Prime Minister used a powerful word that many protesters are using to describe Floyd's death. Murder. Meanwhile, U.S. embassies in Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, and the Democratic Republic of Congo issued rare statements of concern over Floyd's May 25th death and called for accountability after the arrest of a police officer on third-degree murder and manslaughter charges. Why? Because, in the words of Karine Kaneza Natulia, Human Rights Watch's Africa Advocacy Director, George Floyd is all of us.
This is the eternal struggle of any member of a minority community. It's going to touch anyone who has had previous experiences of abuse and oppression, be it because of one's race or religious background or sexual identity, you name it. And at the same time, it touches me in a way that it is bringing up issues that could be very, very easily forgotten as well. And I guess the struggle, and I think the challenge for every institution like the African Union, for leaders around the world, for organizations like ours, is to find the tools to move at and to address some of the deeply seated social economic issues that are the trigger factors for this.
For decades, African leaders have publicly chafed at what they view as paternalistic treatment from Western nations. This tragic incident, says Andrews Atta Asamoah, an Addis Ababa-based researcher for the Institute for Security Studies, could compel the African Union to take the lead. He spoke to VOA by phone from Pretoria.
This is a broader issue, and it fits into a broader systemic crisis which the AU can engage the US on in terms of what needs to be done. Between the AU and also the diaspora community, I think there is an opportunity for the AU now to begin to empathize exactly what the African American community go through on a day-to-day basis.
And Kaneza Natulia says, this strong statement from African leadership could also spur citizens across Africa to demand that the AU stand up for them, too. She spoke to VOA on a WhatsApp call from her base in Washington.
It's important because I think beyond the United States, it reminds us of what Africans in all their diversity have the legitimacy and the right to ask, not only their government, but also the African Union. I was looking at some of the comments and responses to the chairperson's tweet when the statement was out. And it was very interesting how people from Cameroon, people from different countries were like, okay, violence also exists in our own countries, and people die in the hands of security forces. So that's another expectation. It's a layer of expectation that's now being put on the African Union because of that statement.
This week, as fires burned across the U.S., South Africa's ruling African National Congress Party also weighed in the mounting crisis, saying the deaths of George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, and Breonna Taylor show that American society places a perilously low value on Black lives. But rights groups are quick to chime in. No society is perfect. Human Rights Watch has documented how coronavirus lockdowns across much of the continent have spurred security forces to cross lines. In Lagos and Nairobi, security officers shot and killed teenagers while attempting to enforce the restrictions. And in April, soldiers entered the Johannesburg home of Collins Khosa, a father of three, and accused him of violating lockdown regulations. His family says they dragged him outside, slammed him against a cement wall, kicked, slapped, and punched him. He died hours later, and military authorities exonerated the soldiers implicated in his death. His family is challenging that in court. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Today, Today marks the anniversary of a violent crackdown on protesters in Sudan. Sudanese Prime Minister Abdallah Hamdok has reiterated his government's commitment to try those who committed crimes against protesters when Sudanese security forces broke up a sit-in near the military headquarters in Khartoum last year. Hamdok says his government is aware that hundreds of Sudanese families across the country are still waiting for justice for their victims. Some families of the victims say they will not give up despite the delays. For VOA News, Michael Atid reports from Khartoum.
Addressing the nation on state-owned television today, Sudanese Prime Minister Hamdok offered his condolences to all Sudanese families who lost loved ones during the revolution. Speaking in Arabic, he vowed to bring to justice anyone found guilty of committing crimes against protesters.
We need to disclose any single crime that occurred and bring to justice any individual who is found guilty and involved in this tragedy. We are here raising our voices once again. We will not allow such kind of crimes to repeat itself again in our sight and in our country. We are here to build a stable nation of rule of law in Sudan.
At least 120 people were killed and dozens of others wounded on June 3rd in Khartoum when men in military uniforms stormed the sit-in site. The transitional government formed a committee to investigate the crimes committed on that day and to find perpetrators and ensure they face justice in the court of law. Hamdok says the government is waiting for the results of the investigation and will ensure that no one found guilty escapes justice.
We are waiting for the completion of the results of the Independent Investigation Committee, which will be followed by presenting anyone who has been found involved and been accused of taking part in committing atrocities during the crackdown, be presented in a just and transparent trials. This is because we need to stop the bloodshed and guarantee an exclusive meaning of access to justice and build a sustainable social peace in Sudan.
Human Rights Watch issued a statement today urging the Sudanese government to deliver justice to victims and families without further delay. Jehan Henry, the East African director at Human Rights Watch, says authorities should guarantee the findings of the probe are made public upon its announcement and that prosecutors will have resources to follow it up, including bringing charges against those responsible at the highest levels of the government. She says Human Rights Watch believes the crackdown was something planned and ordered at the highest authority.
There were hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of armed men carrying out this crackdown. It was not just a few people, it was a very big operation. That is why we think that this is a very serious crime that could even amount to crimes against humanity, given Sudan's history of using lethal force to crack down on protesters.
Henry says Human Rights Watch wants to see the committee guarantee safety and protection for all victims, including victims of sexual assault.
We've heard from victims and their families that it has been difficult, particularly for people who have experienced sexual violence, to come forward and feel confident that they will be protected.
Farah Abbas Farah, a father of Abbas, who was shot and killed on June 3rd at the sit-in site, says his family and thousands of others are still longing for justice. Speaking in Arabic, Abbas says his family wants to see the perpetrators punished in a court of law as soon as possible.
We need to see a serious commitment for access to justice so that our country can experience stability and peace. We need to see the perpetrators punished so that such kind of inhuman crimes should not occur once again.
Human Rights Watch says Sudan's transitional government remains fragile with little or no progress in establishing the envisioned commissions for law reform, transitional justice or human rights, or appointing a legislative council or state governors. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
Nabil Adib is the head of the Independent National Committee in charge of investigating the incident. He says his team needs more time to determine criminal responsibility in order to charge the perpetrators. For VOA News, Nabil Biagio reports from Washington.
On June 3rd, armed men descended on protesters outside the military headquarters in Khartoum and violently dispersed the sit-in. An Amnesty International report said, the Rapid Support Force and other security forces arrived in vehicles without numbered plates, carrying hundreds of heavily armed soldiers who fired live bullets and tear gas on the crowd, beat protesters, and raped women. At least 100 civilians were killed. In October last year, Sudanese Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok formed a committee to investigate the incident. Speaking in Arabic, the committee's director, Nabil Adib, says his work requires patience to make sure justice is served. He says, this is a committee to investigate a criminal case. It has to be thorough and comprehensive, so the time it has taken so far is not that long. Adib says his team started its work around December 2019, but it lacks funding and logistical support. Speaking Arabic, he says, there is the issue of not having adequate logistical support, which I can attribute to the economic situation in the country. And the bureaucratic nature of the way government institutions work means that sometimes our requests may take a long time before being granted. Adib says the coronavirus pandemic also has delayed the committee's work. He says the work has been on hold for more than 8 weeks because of the restrictions brought on by the COVID-19 pandemic. Speaking Arabic, he says, we don't know when we will get back to work, but I know that what we have already done is more than what we need to do further. That's all I can say for now. Sudanese writer and political analyst Abdul Munaim Himmat says it is important to achieve justice for the victims of the crimes committed on June 3rd.
Sudan's transitional government faces a litmus test for the success of Sudanese revolution by achieving justice to victims and families a year after more than 120 people were killed and hundreds injured and abused.
Himmat says Sudan's transitional government must expedite the process by making the investigation a top priority.
The committee headed by Mr. Nabil Adib attracted criticism for its slow pace. Nabil told the media that his committee would submit a report after COVID-19. I think that, or I afraid, civilians may lose confidence in achieving justice, which would lead to several problems.
Himmat says the government must also address all crimes committed by the regime of former President Omar al-Bashir during his 30-year rule, including war crimes committed in Darfur.
Bashir and other accused of abuses should be sent to the International Criminal Court. Also, transitional justice should seek to strengthen national institutions of justice and security.
In February, Sudan suggested it was prepared to hand over Bashir to the ICC in The Hague to face trial for war crimes and crimes against humanity. It marked a major shift from the previous official position of the country's new rulers. Bashir has yet to be handed over. Sudan's transitional constitution calls for forming a national independent investigation committee to conduct a transparent, meticulous investigation of violations committed on June 3rd, and events and incidents where violations of the rights of civilians were committed. Nabil Biagio, VOA News, Washington.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now leave you with the song Bira Bira by Unique Arafati.
Yeah, Dana Lele Unique Arafati. Bira, how see you?
Bira, bira, fetisu. Bira, bira, itabiligo. Bira, bira, fetisu. Bira, bira, itabiligo. Bira, bira, fetisu. Bira, bira, itabiligo. Bira, bira, fetisu. Bira, bira, itabiligo.
We've been listening to Unique Arafati with the song Bira, bira. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for allowing us into your homes and vehicles. Remember to wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for the coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Bira, bira, fetisu, bira, bira, itabiligo. Bira, bira, fetisu, bira, bira, itabiligo.
bira bira itabiligo ngachine kimadoso bodono ya keri luri yesi mbiliyaro yomotuliyaro alumiro kozo damiri liyaliyaro.